Blog Talk Radio.
Again, we had to cut the bumper music off short because, ladies and gentlemen, audience, please stand. For we have with us tonight the most, bestest, true crime person you can find on iTunes. Yes. Not only does he have a long history of doing outstanding work in the Kansas City Police Force, but did you know that he's probably the number one high-speed motorcycle driver in the United States and America today? The man that Evel Knievel himself may be talking to beyond the grave. Yes, I mean the famous, the good-looking, immensely popular, please turn and cheer for the one true Gary Jenkins, host of Gangland Wire. Yay, go you, sir. Good morning.
Well, thank you, Wayne. You're embarrassing me. I'll give you an appropriate amount of mock humility here. I would be less than human if I didn't say, well, yeah, that's right. Finally, somebody gets it.
Somebody gets it. That's right. I have that to say, as I said here, and I posted in the show notes, and I have to go and rewrite because I made some misspellings, is, you know, I'm looking at iTunes for something to listen to, and I come across your show, and I download it. It's like, wow, I got hooked right off, and I listen to a few of them right now, and by yours, by all means, takes the cake, and not only being informational, but if I may say so, fun.
We try to make it fun. That's part of the deal, isn't it? That because you know I've got my good friend and co-host Aaron Gnerk, and Aaron, you know, he's the voice of the listener. I'm kind of, you know, because of my career, 25 years a police officer and about 10 years being a lawyer now. I sometimes lapse into technical jargon, or I assume facts not in evidence, shall we say. I assume that the listener knows stuff that you know, maybe a lot of people may not quite understand. They kind of know it, but Aaron will say, well, wait a minute now, what's that mean? Like, I remember the first time he did that, I said to one of my early podcasts, I was talking about watching the mob guys that one group was trying to shoot up another one, and we saw one of the guys that are doing the plotting drive around and around the block where one of the proposed victims, the smaller subset of the local mob, was inside drinking by himself. And I said, well, he was making the block. And Aaron said, well, what's that mean, making the block? Well, you know, everybody knows making the block means going around and around the block several times, but I never thought about it. He said, no, I didn't know that. Most people don't know that.
No,
and most recently, what a wheelman is, you know, most people think a wheelman is a getaway driver, but in some police parlance or some police terminology, of the wheelman is the guy that rides the motorcycle, or a wheel officer, or right? They always call a motorcycle a wheel.
Huh. See, I didn't know that. I thought a wheelman was the guy driving, but I learned something new today, huh?
Yeah, that's it. And that may be local. That may be just Kansas City. But I got a feeling that we're not the only police department that if you're a motorcycle officer, you ride a wheel, not a motorcycle, and you're a wheel man.
Yeah, it makes sense. Absolutely. So I have to ask, so you were the working with the intelligence squad in the Kansas City Police Force. What did that entail, sir? What did that entail?
Well, it's the intelligence unit of any large major metropolitan area, and all big cities will have one, and a lot of mid-sized Racine will probably have a small two or maybe three person, at least a two person, two people, two detectives kind of assigned to some kind of intelligence gathering activities. Milwaukee certainly will have one, and Chicago's got a great big one, and Kansas City had one that was kind of in between. It was 12, two squads of six officers each, 12 officers with two sergeants and a captain. And you report directly to the chief of police. They don't. There's not a bunch of layers of colonels and other lieutenant colonels and majors in between the intelligence unit and the chief of police, because you handle intelligence unit will handle all the sensitive things and all the kind of the mob oriented crimes, and then any other kind of groups that advocate civil disorder. Like if we worked on the Ku Klux Klan, for example, here in Kansas City at one time, and back in the 60s or the late 60s, the Students for Democratic Society, the Weather Underground branch of that group that was setting off some bombs, and so anytime you get a group that's advocating civil disorder and then starts taking action, well, you'll work on them. But primarily it will be La Cosa Nostra Mafia, or in more modern times they've kind of morphed over into some of the bigger drug gangs that have international and interstate connections, like the Mexican Mafia or the Costa Rican gang, I think it's M13. It's kind of, that hadn't really happened when I left, but you know, the unit will work on any kind of interstate, extremely organized criminal operations.
Wow.
And we don't really make cases. We gather intelligence and then give it to other people who make cases, because we didn't want all our officers tied up testifying in court. We caught a lot of flack from other policemen and said, well, what do you guys do? Well, we learn about stuff. We learn, you know, the story behind the story and who's really doing some what. Like I asked a young policeman not too long ago, son of a friend of mine, he's a detective of some kind, and I said, well, who are the drug kingpins now? And he said, well, I don't know. You know, so, you know, a lot of policemen, they don't know who the drug kingpins are, who the mob kingpins are, or how the structure works. They may run into it on the streets. They may run into the low-level guys, but they don't ever think above that. They don't really have time, and intelligence guys were given the time, the manpower, and the kind of the freedom to find out the story behind the story.
Wow. I know here, the big thing that Racine Police Department and other ones here, to include the FBI, is big as human trafficking. I mean, I understand there's a task force located in Milwaukee whose job is to really try to shut that down. So they made a series of arrests last week.
There's a big push all over the United States. They made some here in Kansas City, I noticed. Yeah, like in a deal like that, the local FBI and maybe some other federal agencies are assigned to that task force, and then be three or four members from the vice unit, the people that normally work prostitution on a street level, or that will go out and check Craigslist and find prostitution prostitutes that are advertising on Craigslist, or maybe take complaints from Johns that have been robbed and go out and actually try to make cases. And then intelligence guys, well, maybe you'll assign an intelligence guy or two or gal to work with that task force, and their job will be to, you know, if they've got connections, who is really making the money behind this? Is there a higher up that's pulling the string? That's what they're looking for. To look
at
the whole organization as a whole, to find, so you don't just get the low level, street level people, and the kingpins walk away and just get some more street level minions to do their bidding and continue in the racket of human slavery and importing those girls in from other countries and holding them as slaves, as sex slaves, basically, while they make money.
Yeah, it's pretty horrific. The reports. You know, we had a community event where they had brought in experts to talk about the conditions, and it was as frightening. To say the least. So what got you interested were you interested in doing gangland wire when you were still with the Kansas City Police Department, or was that something that happened after
you left? I kind of was, Wayne. I worked that case in Kansas City. I was assigned to the task force that worked on the mob guys who were plotting with, mobsters of the Chicago outfit and Milwaukee mob, Frank Ballesteri and his sons and Angelo Leonardo and Maishi Rockman from the Cleveland mob and Joey Iupa and Joey the Clown Lombardo and Angelo La Prieta in Chicago. I worked on a street level with the task force here, mainly doing surveillance, and and I was part of the group that served a search warrant on our mob underboss, a guy named Carl Tuffy DeLuna's house. And it was a big case. It brought down the Midwest, the heads of those four families, and put them all in jail basically for the rest of their life. And totally, like in Kansas City, there's still remnants of the old mob, but, even all those other families in Milwaukee, Chicago, and Cleveland, they all lost. They lost the Teamsters, basically. That's what they lost. That's the biggest thing they lost. They lost the influence over the Teamsters Union, which gave them a huge power base of steady stream of money and political power and access to the Teamsters pension fund to loan money to their friends and then get kickbacks on that. So they're kind of reduced to, running a book and doing other little scams. They just didn't have that, couple hundred thousand dollars a month coming out of Las Vegas. So we, I'm assigned to that, and it hits the national news media and in the national consciousness. And then this guy named Nicholas Pileggi writes a book titled Casino, and he hits it big. And then Martin Scorsese does a movie based on the book, and he hits it big, and everybody knows about it. And I had a policeman on the street one day. I was just walking close to a bookstore, and he sees me and said, "Hey," he said, "I just read your name in a book." I said, "What?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "The book titled Casino." He said, "It's over there at Barnes and Noble." And so I read over there, and I didn't even know this book was coming out, and I flipped through the pages, and I see what it's about. And so I look in the, I think it's in the back in list of things. I think my name was in the back, but I can't remember. I found my name pretty quick. And just all it really said was, I was a member of the intelligence unit that helped serve the search warrant on Tuffy's house, and this is what we found, because that's where we found all these handwritten notes that verified all his activities in overseeing the skim and going to Chicago and meeting people and going out to Las Vegas and meeting people. And so we all paid attention to it, because I still meet periodically with a lot of those guys that worked on that task force, worked with surveillance, and sat in the wire room. And actually, the case agent, Bill Owsley, has been on my show a couple of times. We all meet for months periodically, about every 3 months. And we got to talking like, well, God damn it, they just made that into a soap opera about Lefty Rosenthal and the Ace Rothstein and his beautiful wife Sharon Stone, and the real name would have been Jerry Rosenthal, and the Joe Pesci character, it would have been Tony Spilotro, and kind of more of a soap opera about them, and really wasn't, they kind of made it look like Kansas City just stumbled into this, and we're a bunch of buffoons here in Kansas City, and those are the cool people out there. So I got I got copies of all those audio from all those wiretaps and bugs we did, and did a documentary to show, this is the story behind, this is how this really works, this is what this is really about. This wasn't anything about Tony Spilotro sleeping with Lefty Rosenthal's wife. It wasn't anything about that. That everybody wants to make that into something, and it's much sexier and more entertaining, but that isn't what any of it is about. It's about money. It's about power, and it's about the Teamsters, and it's about political power in Las Vegas, like I've got in Nevada. Like, I've got these guys talking about making campaign donations, hiding campaign donations through different legitimate people in casinos. And so that's the story I want to tell.
Where can we find this documentary at, sir?
I'm on I sell it as a DVD off my website, www.ganglandwire.com, and at that website you'll find my true crime podcast, which you mentioned, or you can, I'd rather you go to iTunes, I guess, in a way, and give me a review and subscribe on iTunes. And Wayne, I think you gave me a review, and I appreciate that, and I hope I sent you a link to a couple of extra podcasts. I don't remember if I did. If I didn't, let me know, and I will.
No, you have not, sir. But I know how busy you are. I'm just fascinated. let me go back to casino days just for a second.
Yeah.
I understand now, and I might be mistaken, please correct me, that Rosenthal was also an FBI informant?
He was. He was what they call a top echelon informant. Now, the FBI to this day, my very good friend Bill Owsley refuses to acknowledge that or admit it, and even to me. And because they, the old time agents, they believe in continuing, even though Lefty's dead, continuing that secrecy because they don't want to spoil it for others. Some new person coming in, they see that as soon as you die, then the FBI runs around and says, oh, he was a death by slide and he was our informant all these years. And other people see that, and, you know, they've got families and they don't want that. They promise them it'll never, ever be revealed. But there were some agents, and Bill was mad about this. I could tell in the tone of his voice. I said, well, there's a reporter out in Las Vegas named, Jane Ann Morrison for the Las Vegas Review Journal, and she quotes unnamed FBI sources saying, yeah, he was a top echelon informant. Bill just kind of gave me not a dirty look, but just a look of disgust that somebody would ever verify that. So I'm 100% sure, and she printed it, and I believe it. I could tell just talking to some of these guys that he was there, and he never got prosecuted. He was right in the middle of all of it, and he didn't have to testify, and he never got prosecuted. If you note that, so there's suspicious enough. That's why there's a famous. I got a little bit of audio that's impossible to understand, other than in the original audio. They did a transcript, and Frank Ballesteri is arguing around with Joe or John, one of his sons, and one of them's saying, I think one of the sons is saying, well, I don't know, he wouldn't do that. Lefty wouldn't do that. And Frank says, oh man, he says, you squeeze a Jew, you get a snitch. And what a classic mob line that is, squeeze a Jew and you get a snitch, or get a stool pigeon. I can't remember, but they knew by the end, they knew that he was, that's why he got bombed. It wasn't anything about his wife or Tony Spilotto or anything. That was probably Ballesteri or in conjunction with Nick Sabella here in Kansas City. Chicago probably didn't have any part of it. They all liked Lefty. They thought he was their guy. But Nick, he talks all the time about Lefty being a snitch and not trusting him and being out of control. And Lefty was the one that brought all the heat down on him by his confrontation with the Gaming Commission out there.
Yeah, to me, I don't want to glorify a group of people who do horrific things, and the Mafia does done horrific things, no doubt about that. But to me, when you look at Casino and you read the book and other things about Vegas, it's absolutely fascinating history of the mob.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's how it works.
Yeah. And now you read about Vegas and you read about the Sands Corporation, and I can't think of the guy that's a billionaire, that this guy himself, $750 million from the taxpayers for the arena, right, for the NFL, right? And wait a second, and the mob is doing bad things. Okay, I get that. But they, to me, in my opinion, stole $750 million out of the taxpayers' pocket. You don't need, I think it was the Godfather, a guy with a briefcase can steal more money than 100 men with guns.
That's true.
It's wild. Go
ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I apologize. I cut you off.
I was just saying that stealing more with a briefcase than you can with a gun. That's that's what the modern day mob has really morphed into. At least in Kansas City, and maybe they're still doing some of the old timey stuff back east. But you really don't. When's the last time you heard of a mob hit going down, and particularly in Chicago? I pay more attention to Chicago. God, those guys in Chicago, they were hitting people all the time. We had a small group of our guys here that are grandsons and sons of the original Savellas and Camisanos that were ruling in the 70s that did do a bunch of hits, and people that they were worried about might testify or inform or had cheated somebody or had not needed to make an example of them because they were they weren't kicking back the money like they caught them stealing from their fellow mobsters, and we haven't had a mob hit since God I don't know when, and even a bunch of guys took a fall, and a couple of them were testifying after 2000 on a gambling thing, a sports gambling ring they have going on, and And they just all immediately caught fleas. The head guy, the oldest guy, and the, probably the guy that was running the little ring, a guy named William Camposano Jr., his dad was a highly feared mob boss and like a capo in the 60s and 70s, named Willie the Rat Camposano. And his son just folds, and he says, he just copped a plea immediately, took his 3 or 4 years down in El Reno and came back up. And the next day, all the rest of them that were charged, they just copped pleas. Nobody fought it. Nobody, there was no witness intimidation. There was nothing. They just got it over with and went on. So they learned something out of that, killing people and bringing heat down on them. Because once you start killing people, then the newspapers get involved and the law enforcement doubles down on their manpower and their energy they put in the investigation. And, they learned that they just can't stand up against the weight of all the governmental agencies. People used to grant them a whole lot more power because they really had. And they did on a local level because they used to really be heavily involved in local politics. But they lost all that, and once they lose that, they can't stand up against the weight of a heavy investigation anymore.
No, especially with the powers under the Patriot Act and
yeah,
other laws.
Oh, yeah. Plus the enhanced sentencing. You take a guy, and you take a 30-some, 40-year-old guy, and he's looking at 50 years in the penitentiary on some mandatory minimums, and you can make a snitch out of anybody, man. So it's only the new up and comers and primarily not long time American citizens that come from poor countries that will still take a risk.
Right, because whether they really have one of those sometimes. I know the two guys that tried to break in my house in September are probably going to look at, the repeat felons, the place that they busted had a gun, so the felons in the possession of the gun are probably looking at 5 years, if not more.
Yeah.
But again, it is what it is, and you need to put, in my opinion, you need to put the bad people away and somehow try to help the people who you can then change their lifestyle to become productive citizens. How that works out is beyond me. But in my opinion, it's something
I don't know. But anyhow, some things are bigger than all of us. But society makes these moves one way or the other, and we just kind of follow along and hope it all works out for the best. You know what? The Supreme Court said that the states are social laboratories. So you try something out in the state, you try out legalizing marijuana and see how it works in a state before you do anything on a national level. That's a good example of social laboratory and it's the experiment that's going on right now in this country.
Absolutely. And that's a whole fascinating subject because and I'm not going to go down that far because I could talk about that subject forever, but let's not.
I've got a book that's going to be coming out pretty soon. It'll mainly be an ebook. It's going to be, I use transcripts and what I do is I have a section that couple of chapters explained about how we got into the skimming investigation, and then it'll be kind of a look from at the wiretaps and the hidden microphone transcripts that explain how this investigation was conducted and how the evidence that they gathered, the real evidence that they gathered on the skimming, as well as a lot of gossip and stuff that they were picking up, and how the mob really works. Like they're talking about, making political donations and how they, the local politician wouldn't take them from one guy, so they said, well, let's run them through Paul Loudon over at the Flamingo, and then they said, well, he won't take them from him either. So I hope people like it. It's going to be interesting. It'll seem a little bit, it'll have to be a true mob fan that wants to read wiretap transcripts of real field mobsters talking about how they really work.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of us out there. I know, speaking for myself and my friends, we all are. And I think the ones, my friends, started either, in my case, by watching the movie The Godfather and the Valachi Papers, and now my younger friends watching The Sopranos.
Yeah, that's true. The Sopranos they kind of reignited the interest in the mob, didn't they? The whole subculture of You know, that's what's fascinating about it. It's this whole subculture that people don't know much about unless you were born into it or you had neighbors and friends that were part of those mob families with, you know, the kind of the ritual way of doing things, the social life, the large families and the closeness of the blood family and then extended out to the mob family and, you know, how the dads, mob buddies come around and they're like your uncles. And that's, you know, that's how it is. You know, the Sopranos really pictures, draws a clear and specific picture of life in a mob family, not just the things that they go out and do to make money, but the whole thing about it.
Right. And that's all, I think, goes back to Sicily because they, in some senses, formed to oppress, to fight the oppression the French brought with them when they occupied that country in the 14th century. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really, the mafia originally was like like their own internal government and police force looking out for the poor people against the oppressors. And that's kind of, that was the, you know, the original basis for it. And they just, they kept going and they still will look out. You know, there's a lot of rumors and myths in the Italian neighborhoods that, you know, and they still will persist to this day that, you know, you don't go around a mob neighborhood just burglarizing houses and doing street crimes or you'll get hurt.
Right. We have a pizza place in Racine. It's in the middle of the worst neighborhood ever imaginable, right? The worst you can't imagine a worse neighborhood. But yet cars in that parking lot aren't vandalized, people coming in and going out aren't harassed. Everything around that building is perfect, right? No garbage in the street, no nothing. Because rumor is a mafia guy owns it, right? I don't know if that's true or not. But as long as that image persists, they're safe. Nobody's going to screw with them because everybody fears what would happen.
Yeah.
It's an element to that, I guess. But we're quickly running out of time, sir. So if you can please tell us where we can find your great stuff, I really would appreciate it.
Go to iTunes and just in the search mechanism and just type in the words Gangland Wire. And you'll find the and all the other Stitcher and Player FM and I think I've got it listed with all the different kind of services like that, or just go to Google and type in Gangland Wire and Mafia or something like that, and you'll find or iTunes, and you'll find the iTunes page or Gangland Wire. You'll find my website and you can listen to them on my website. You can also see my written blog, and I've got a YouTube channel. You can go to iTunes or YouTube and type in Gangland Wire, and you might want to type Gary or Jenkins or something like that in there. Then you'll find a whole bunch of clips from my movie, and then I've got a Kansas City mob tour app. Go to iTunes App Store and search for Kansas City Mob Tour, and for $1.99 you can take a mob tour of Kansas City mob sites and learn a lot about them and see pictures of them, and my podcast is tied to it, so you can listen to my podcast through that app also, and then go to Amazon and you can rent my movie for $1.99. Just type in, search for Gangland Wire, and you'll be able to find my movie and rent it, or you can buy it as a digital download. Now, if you want to buy your own DVD, you have to get it off my website or just get a hold of me. I'll do the contact feature on the website, or you can Google, you can email me at ganglandwire@gmail.com also. All I got going. I hope you listen to the podcast. We have a good time doing that. We're building an audience. We're building it every month, and we need to get some advertisers and get it up high enough to get advertisers. But hopefully we can do that in another year.
And we're working on that, sir. We're working. Keep thinking the good thoughts. With that, sir, again, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I want to thank you and
thank
Aaron for doing the great job that you do. And please say hi to Aaron. And try not to break any more Last Speed records on your motorcycle, please.
Yeah, people, you'll have to listen to my most recent podcast to know what he's talking about with the Last Speed records. That's my
All
personal
right,
foray into advertising. Bye.
All right. Thanks a lot, sir. Bye. Bye-bye. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the show. I really appreciate it. The English lady is kicking me off the air as we speak, but again, I want to thank everybody for coming in the air. It means a lot to me. Talk to y'all soon. Bye.